Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. It's Sunday, July the 10th, and I'm going to do a podcast on Brexit. This is Brexit 2. As you'll know, I recorded some thoughts a couple of days after the result came through, which I think would have been the 24th, 25th of June, when the result came through that the great British public had voted to leave the European Union by a margin of a few percent. Don't know what it was. It's a million plus votes anyway was the difference, and on quite a large turnout for a British election. I think of what, somewhere around 70 or something like that.
It was a very small margin.
That was a small margin, yeah. But I think what the turnout was, about 69%, 70% or something.
I think it was 75.
Yeah, it was as much as that. Yeah, and that is big for a British election, very often. Yeah. I mean, the Cameron.
It's obviously a very passionate subject for a lot of people.
Well, there's a lot of the future hangs by it, you know. And as I said in the last podcast, you know, the level of debate was very poor. It was more a propaganda exercise than a proper debate. I don't think people in general had got good information, and there was a lot of gut feeling, and I think the xenophobia card was played.
And turns out there was just quite a lot of lying going on, really.
There was quite a lot of fibs and lies.
Yeah.
And so forth.
Morning.
And a sorry affair altogether, you know, and of course there's been turmoil ever since. So this is Brexit 2, and it's getting on for 3 weeks, two to three weeks down the line, and obviously there have been developments, and I'll try and in this first part summarise what I take to be the significant events, and I may miss some things, but I have been trying to keep up with this. You know, I've been looking at the gutter press as well as various sources on the internet from both sides, you know, and various analyses. Not necessarily confining myself to the stuff that I find sympathetic. I hate something that's kind of generally on the left. But looking at the other side as well, and getting myself a bit of an impression, really. And anyway, that's the first bit I want to share, what I think significant up to now. And then in the second part, to draw out some implications and some ideas of what I think can be done. What is to be done, that great political question? What is to be done?
Yeah.
All right, so what's happened since Brexit? Now, as I mentioned in the last podcast, there was about to be a vote of no confidence in Jeremy Corbyn. I think I kind of probably misphrased that in the podcast, saying that it had happened. It hadn't happened. It had just been decided that it would happen. Well, subsequently, it's happened, and most of the PLP, the Parliamentary Labour Party, have withdrawn their support from Mr. Corbyn, and those that were on his front bench have left.
Which is a very sad thing.
It's a very sad thing. There is, I think, it's about 170 odd PLP. Have separated off from Corbyn's leadership, and he's got about 40 odd who are still with him. Meanwhile, you know, the guy who's hanging in there, there's been calls for him to resign, he's hanging in there on the grounds that he was elected by an overwhelming majority of the biggest grassroots of any political party in the UK by a long way, and certainly the biggest Labour grassroots I've had for a long time. So he's refused. I mean, even David Cameron from the dispatch box at Prime Minister's Questions said, you know, for God's sake, man, leave, you know.
Yeah.
Which, to my mind, that was the most symbolic moment in recent politics, because it exposed, without any shadows over the scene, the complete nature of Parliament, you know. I mean, David Cameron, I suppose the logic of his outburst is that we need a proper opposition. You know, we need a proper opposition. Is he a fucking politician, you know? Isn't it better for him to have no opposition from the point of view of exerting power? Well, I mean, the reason why he's complaining about there being no opposition is because the idea that you have a loyal opposition, a government and a loyal opposition to the government, just legitimates the whole fucking circus. like I say, you know, it's there for the appearance, you know, the appearance of debate and of democracy and all the rest of it. But of course, decisions are made behind closed doors, you know. And a lot of stuff happens at Parliament is powerless to do anything about. It's there just for the circus and the appearance and the whole theatrical nature of the parliamentary process. Its whole function as a diversion was exposed in that moment by David Cameron telling the leader of another party elected by the grassroots of his party with an overwhelming majority to resign.
Yeah.
It exposes the farcical nature of the whole fucking stupid game, you know. So fuck the parliamentary Labour Party, to be honest with you. I mean, I actually wrote a letter to to Rob Maris, MP, our local MP, saying, well, look, you know, there's a schism between the parliamentary Labour Party and the grassroots. And I understand that professional politicians, given the nature of their task, have a very keen sense of realpolitik. You know, they fancy themselves as being realistic, you know. You know, in opposition, they can say bantroident, they get into government, it's expantroident. You know, and they call it realpolitik. Oh, you know, the actual reality of politics is different from the idealism of opposition. So they pride themselves on that. But I put it to Rob Maris that that realpolitik was the very thing that put them out of touch with the grassroots. You know, and there was bound to be a schism at some point between, if we ever got any genuine Labour grassroots, true to the principles of the founders of the Labour Party. But you know, we'd have this schism, it's just inevitable. But I put it to him that realpolitik is actually a fossilisation of imagination. The political imagination gives up, and they call it realpolitik. You know, and whereas the grassroots represents hope, represents possibilities, represents new thinking, represents, you know, a determination and an optimism to have more social justice. And you know, all in the gutter press, all of these aspirations are poo-pooed. You know, it was either unrealistic, loony left, etc., 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 you know. But the grassroots is saying, we want it. We want something real, actually. You know, realpolitik is about as deluded as you can get, to be honest, because it's just a failure of the imagination. And we're not going to move forward as a country, as a species, as a human race, without imagination. You know, and this failure of imagination, really, that seems to happen to people the minute they don the shiny suit, is pretty catastrophic. Anyway, I told him and what I thought, and I think I got like a rote letter back, but it's pretty shitty letter back about UKIP's going to get in, and then, for fuck's sake, man, be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid. Anyway, you can tell I got no truck with the Parliamentary Labour Party. They're
well, not after what they did to Corbyn.
Well, no,
that
I mean,
pretty awful.
But of course, he's hung in there, and good, yeah, on him. And it looks like there's going to be a leadership contender next week. He's somebody about as significant as I don't know anything about her, you know, except what's now appearing in the press.
She's not very prominent then.
Not really. But they're now saying, the saga goes on, I suppose for the purposes of completeness here, we should mention that they're now saying that Corbyn, to stand in the leadership election that will transpire shortly, has got to get the backing of 50 MPs. Because that's what it says in the Labour Party constitution, apparently. Even though there's also the suggestion that because he's the incumbent, that he's entitled to stand. So there's no legal battle. Look, the lawyers are in there, lining their pockets.
Yeah.
arguing the toss on whether he can even fucking stand or not, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the writing's been on the wall for ages that there'll be some kind of split. As happened with the SDP when the Labour right split off, because they didn't like the kind of a lurch to the left that was coming up from the grassroots,
yeah,
when the Social Democratic Party and the Gang of Four.
Yeah.
It's going back a long time. I mean, that fizzle, they just become the Liberal Democrats in the end, really. There's something like that'll happen in the Parliamentary Labour Party, will form some kind of like junior Tory party, you know, which we kind of, we call like the centre left, you know, euphemistically call it centre, they're just junior Tories, but they'll split off, maybe they will. And in fact, a rich businessman has offered to put up some millions of pounds to help them to do that if they want to. Now, doesn't that say things to you? You know, so that's just just what's happening in the Labour Party to Jeremy Corbyn. And of course, the press has been absolutely shitty to Corbyn.
Yeah.
I mean, and one of the things Rob Marish said was, his campaign to stay in the EU was lukewarm. And the gutter press were saying all this stuff about it. Oh, he didn't really bother. The man travelled thousands of miles. They just refused to report it. And there was in meeting after meeting after meeting, day after day after day.
He came to Wolverhampton.
He came to Wolverhampton, yeah. I mean, he stayed till midnight talking to people one to one.
Yeah, we knew people who were there.
Yeah. I mean, the guy was tireless, and they pretended that he'd been lukewarm because he didn't kind of stab the air like Adolf Hitler, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was tireless. And I've kind of watched YouTube videos of him, you know, speaking to gatherings of health service people and so forth, and just being very, very precise and factual and very, very clear and upfront and transparent about his ethical commitments and his political beliefs. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
And there's loads of that, but you look at them, they get about 50 hits or something. Yeah. He's had to sort of... Well, look, the press have got it, the gutter press, which of course is owned by billionaires, for the most part, has got it in for him. And it just isn't true. I mean, other things that have gone on, with various calls for second referendums, referenda, I suppose, the technical thing there. And loads of signatures for this, that and the other, you know, and petitions flying all over the place. I mean, 400,000 people signed a petition for Corbyn to stay. 400,000, you know. Yeah. Oh yeah, and subsequently, over 100,000 extra people have joined the Labour Party, but there is a suggestion that some of these belong to a campaign to load the party with grassroots people who'll vote against him. Now, I think there is some of that, but I think if he does get to stand, that'll increase his majority. But we'll see. Nobody actually knows. You know, nobody actually knows. Anyway, chaos in the Labour Party. Obviously, I mentioned last time, you know, about the increasing xenophobia, or the way in which the xenophobia card was played. And that seems to have given permission to the small proportion of British people who are xenophobic to kind of express themselves in an extremely unpleasant way. I mean, quite apart from the shooting of a Member of Parliament, shooting and stabbing to death of a Member of Parliament by a loony inflamed with right-wing ideas, quite apart from that, there's after the vote, you know, there were people daubing graffiti on Polish community centres and so forth, and quite a lot more use of the N-word. And so. Anyway, the reportage of hate crimes, as we call them, I mean, it is actually illegal, you know, to incite hatred, and probably rightly so. I think it's gone up by a factor of about 5 from its usual kind of low-level background. 100 or so a year. I don't know what, you know. It's not like a big crime statistic, but it's quadrupled at least. You know. And again, I will repeat. I think there are plenty of reasons for voting Brexit, which is fairly rational. Which have got nothing to do with that. All right. But the point is, the xenophobia card was played. That is the point I want to make. Anyway, interestingly, obviously, you know, the Labour Party is thrown into chaos. Actually, Parliament was thrown into chaos. The Tories, I mean, David Cameron resigned the following day after the Brexit. And he said he's going to hang around till October or something to get it going, and then of course there's now a leadership election. Now the leadership election had its own high drama, in which Boris backed down, having been stabbed in the back by his best friend Michael Gove, who'd sworn that he would never stand and then stood. larger high drama, larger kind of soap opera for the tabloids. And so Boris was out. Nigel Farage stood up and said, "I am now resigning my leadership of UKIP." So he went.
Causing a massive amount of chaos.
He went. So yeah. I call this light the blue touch paper and retire syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, okay, Cameron called the referendum in the first fucking place. Okay, he campaigned for stay, but he called it. And then when it went pear-shaped, fucking jump ship. Boris kind of led it, and he's got this kind of pop star profile for reasons that escape me. And it all looks like he's set to be Tory leader. Then he jumps ship. You know, Gove jumps back on. I mean, incidentally, at the time of speaking, Gove is out because they're now having a Tory party leadership election. At the time of speaking, you know, there's two candidates now, which will go to the grassroots. And it's Theresa May and, what's she called, Andrea Leadsom? What's her name? Andrea? I don't know. Anyway, again, these are people that one doesn't bother with, you know, for some reason. And Gove's out. But then, of course, Nigel Farage, you know, it's went. It's like that. It's like a rat, you know, they light the blue touch pipe and retire.
Yeah.
Get to a place of safety, all the explosion happens. And, of course, explosion there has been, you know. Stock market, extremely wobbly. Currency all over the place and all the rest of it. I mean, you could have a field day with conspiracy theories, can't you? You know, I mean, for instance, this is what I heard on the Young Turks, which is a sort of an alternative news, internet news outlet. American, slightly, you know, social democratic, sort of Bernie Sanders. They've done a lot of support for Bernie Sanders. They do get their shit together and put some kind of good copy out there from an angle that you just don't get in the mainstream press. I mean, but the guy there, the main guy, Jenko Gur or whatever he's called, got the idea that that why Boris went was because the Murdoch press had got dirt on him. That they've been digging around, as they do, and they found some stuff in his past that would wreck him if it was exposed to the public. And they've said to him, because Murdoch doesn't want him, Murdoch doesn't want him, so he's instructed the gutter press, the Murdoch gutter press, to blackmail him and say, like, leave or we'll expose this stuff. Now, I mean, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I'm just illustrating that there's these what they're called, conspiracy theories going the rounds. I mean, there's another one, it's Max Kaiser, comes out of him. Max Kaiser, he puts out the Kaiser report on Russia Today. He's completely crackpot. He's quite crazy, but his analysis of particularly of finance, because he was a Wall Street stockbroker, is kind of quite, often quite accurate. You know, he says such and such will happen, and it does, you know. So one has to check all this stuff with a pinch of salt, but at the same time, you know, entertain it to see where it leads in your mind. I mean, and he got the idea that the hedge funds put money in to basically rig in the British bookies, just by, you know, by putting bets on stay, so that the bookies were giving the shortest odds on stay and longer odds on leave. But that was actually rigged by the hedge funds, by hedge fund managers. They just used some money to make it look that way. And of course, that means that the odds on leave, which they knew was going to happen, they were pretty certain leave was going to happen, were very good. So at the last minute, they're putting bets on leave and made a fortune by manipulating the whole scenario, you know.
I don't know how they live with themselves.
God knows. Well, that's what they do. That's what it is. All that stuff about hedge funds, you know. Since the Big Bang and Reaganomics, that is what it did. It enabled the financial system to do more or less what it likes, you know. And they got more and more and more outlandish with derivatives and so forth, which led to the subprime mortgage crisis and the collapse of Lehman Brothers and all the bank bailout, all the stuff in 2008, which of course, the cost was handed on to the taxpayers. In other words, us. And that's what austerity is. You know. Anyway, I have my own conspiracy theory. It started the other day when I went to the corner shop over there on the estate there, and bought a loaf of bread, and the guy at the checkout said, "Do you want a free Daily Telegraph?" And I thought, "Well, that's it. My conspiracy theory mechanism kicked in big stuff. They're giving away free Daily Telegraphs."
Yeah.
And it was quite useful to read it. And I mean, what I noticed, first thing I noticed was that the Right Honourable Sajid Javid MP, who is the Secretary of State for Business, Tory Minister, has announced his five-part plan for how to save the economy after Brexit's fully implemented. And his big idea is, his number one idea is cut corporation tax. and invite the corporations to come to Britain. I mean, you know, they're well on the way to taking it all over. The Transatlantic Treaty has got clauses in it which will enable them to take over the National Health Service and sue the government if they don't let them in its current form. And, you know, but he's saying, well, we'll throw the doors wide open to the corporations. His solution is give the country to the corporations. These are the fuckers that got us into the mess in the first place.
Yeah.
You know. And you kind of think, well, if they're paying less tax, that's obviously going to impact on public services, which are already being whittled back to the bone, you know. Of course, it's a corporate rip-off. I say this is exactly analogous to 2008, because what happened in 2008 was this massive chaos in the mortgage market, because these subprime mortgages, it was well known at the time they were given out, that a lot of those people would default because they just couldn't pay it anyway. So that the banks would then be able to repossess their properties, you know. And it's an enormous rip-off perpetrated on the poorest. And this is the same. But of course, in the chaos that ensued, the government's then bailed the banks out. I mean, they've been making profits with all these dodgy loans. When it went pear-shaped as it was bound to, they then went crying to the taxpayer, too big to fail, basically saying, we'll bring the economy down completely unless you bail us out. With taxpayers' money, you know, with the earnings of the people of the future, some as yet unborn. That's what basically it is. But the key thing that enabled that to happen is the chaos at the beginning, the sudden rash of foreclosures, the collapse of the Lehman Brothers. And of course we've got this, you know, we've got the three like the blue touch paper wallers, Cameron, Farage, and the other wanker, Boris, I don't know, all just jumping ship. Yeah, like the blue touch paper, and there's the chaos, complete chaos.
Yeah.
Where's no plan, nothing, complete chaos. You know, complete chaos. And the way that the money people work is that when there's chaos, they always manage to use that because it throws all the value up into the air. They know how to siphon it up upwards. That's precisely what the 2008 crisis was. It was a crisis, it was a chaos which enabled the already rich, the 1%, to just siphon wealth upwards from the very bottom of society, immiserating the bottom third, the bottom half, whatever. And this is all across the Western world, you know. And enriching themselves and at the same time becoming more powerful. Because that kind of wealth is power. So we're getting this amassment of wealth and power in the hands of a few that's born out of chaos. And you said, like the way these three lit the blue touch paper and then ran off makes you think, well, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I believe in the cock-up theory of history. I think history transpires through mistakes. People do conspire, but very few conspiracies actually come off. What if they do? They generally go sideways because of some other contingencies that haven't been thought about. You know, that's how I see it. But nevertheless, you could kind of, if you put your tinfoil hat on, you say these three fuckers did that on purpose, just to get the chaos for this, handing the country over to the corporations, and a further siphoning off of wealth and power into the hands of the few, and the further controlling of our lives by corporations, particularly those which handle money. If you control money, you control the world, you know. And that's what's happening. As far as I can see, that this is a part of that. And I suppose the overall picture, though, is of the chaos, because that's what's right in your face. And it's fragmentation. I mean, Scotland voted, didn't it, to stay in? Every district in Scotland voted to stay in. So Nicola Sturgeon, you know, who's got a majority in the Scottish Parliament under the Scottish Nationalist, Nationalist Party, saying we've got to have another referendum. We're going to go out. It's that fragmentation there of the UK, fragmentation of Europe. The French right, the German right, the Dutch right, getting ready to try and mobilise a similar event in their countries. So you look at the possible fragmentation of Europe. The inability of the Spanish electoral system to form a government. And so on and so on and so on, you know. And I mean, for me, even in America, you know, Texas has been threatening to secede, you know, and it's starting to look like, well, maybe they'll pull it off. You know, so fragmentation. And of course, in the Labour Party, just coming back to that, you know, it's between grassroots and the parliamentary party. And I think that is really, really telling. It's really telling. It's almost, it's almost as if parliament's irrelevant. No, and I actually would, I could see that happening.
Yeah.
It's irrelevant. It can't express the politics that's trying to happen from underneath, you know. And I mean, I think that the chaos that we're seeing is really ultimately a reaction to the austerity, and it goes right the way back to 2008. And that was enabled in turn by Reaganomics, Mrs. Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, and the Big Bang, when they actually just said to the money people, do what you like. And of course they did, and robbed everybody, basically, by all kinds of cunning means. You control money, you control everything. Because we need means of exchange. We need to trade. We need to be able to go to the shop. But, you know, see, it's... So, of course... You know, this fragmentation is of nation states and coalitions of nations, and we're seeing it in the UK, in the EU, and in the USA, as I just mentioned. And this disintegration actually is like a disintegration of the power of the state. You know, when Spain can't form a government, their state is very weak. The British state is currently very, very weak because it's got a prime minister who's dying to get away. No clear direction from the Labour Party as yet. No clear direction from the Tories as yet. The whole thing is stable, you know. And Parliament's deliberations looking to be irrelevant. And of course, what's waiting in the wings is the structure of global corporate power. If the nation state collapses, there's like a net underneath of global corporate power, but it will hand power completely to you know, the unelected global corporations. Now, whether this is going to be the big tech guys or you know, now that oil is losing its oomph, but this is what we're seeing. Mm. is another massive corporate rip-off and another step forward in the march of a globalised corporate power that controls everything. In other words, slavery.
Yeah.
You know, which we have anyway, you know, disguised slavery, but just slavery. Anyway, my thought is how to resist all this. Well, I'm not pinning my hopes, as I say, on these democratic processes of parliament and stuff. I think we have to do all that. And I do hope Jeremy gets his shit together, you know, and forms a social grassroots movement that's got a lot of integrity and coherence in the way that it works. And it does work for social justice, greater equality, you know, services for those who need them. You know, they're just a truly civilised society, a truly civilised and peaceful society. But I think resistance, you know, it needs to be at the grassroots, you know. I mean, sadly, the schism even between Parliament and the grassroots, you know. And people of goodwill, I would say to them, you know, it's the grassroots that's going to be decisive, because unless there is grassroots opposition to the enslavement of the further enslavement of the people. It's going to go ahead of pace now. Our parliaments are kind of pretty well powerless to stop it. They work for it in the first place anyway, for the most part, you know. So grassroots, just doing me take my my hero Tony Blair. Oh, of course, I've got Chilcot, you know. I mean, just to make matters worse, you know, to bring Parliament into deeper disrepute and the political processes, the mainstream political processes into disrepute. Think Chilcot, you know.
Which is?
It's a report that's been many years in the producing, which runs to 2.6 million words. It's four times longer than War and Peace. that came out last week by John Chilcot on the Iraq War. And everything that he could say about the Iraq War and the...
Good morning.
The conduct of that war, you know, which was launched on the basis that Saddam Hussein had got weapons of mass destruction that he could deliver in 45 minutes. Completely untrue. Anyway, the Chilcot inquiry, to cut the long story short, found that the Blair government, a Labour government, remiss on many, many counts. Such things as not supplying the troops with proper equipment. Having made the decision with George Bush privately prior to any kind of discussion. Not discussing sufficiently with his ministers. You know, and I might add, ignoring a million people who demonstrated outside Parliament saying, we don't want this. So, that's the Chilcot inquiry, which and the point here being that it brings Parliament and our political processes into further disrepute.
Yeah,
and,
more
you
chaos.
Know, I mean, that was a million people have died pretty well as a result of that. And, you know, further disrepute, which again says that, you know, that the hope for humanity is in the grassroots of humanity. And it's in the grassroots of humanity connecting with each other. This is the unique opportunity we've got. We've never been able to connect with each other like we can now. You know? The biggest community on the planet isn't China, it's Facebook.
Yeah.
There's more people with a Facebook account than there are citizens of the People's Republic of China.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's... We have the ability to connect. And we have the ability to organise now. If we get our heads around it, as a grassroots, with far more mobility and thoroughness and powerful action than ever before, and it should be taken. So, but I think a grassroots is probably going to need to be a broad coalition of people of goodwill, you know? Broad coalition. They don't have to agree on everything. They just have to agree that we need to be thrashing some stuff out here at the bottom and making that powerful. But these oligarchs, whether parliamentary or financial, are actually just rendered irrelevant. We just get on with it. We build our society, we build our lives together on the basis of goodwill, on freedom, equality, working together, faith in our ability to do wonderful things when we cooperate. That's the hope. That is the hope. So, if you're a person of goodwill, get involved somewhere, but connect with as many people as you can, share with as many people as you can, and form true connections of solidarity with as many people as you can around you on the basis of just basically kind of human decency and compassion.